Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
Mark Grody.
I can't remember the last time that the Chicago Bears arrived at their off week, their bye week, and we all weren't saying things like, man, do we need this? We all need a break from the Bears.
The number one thing we've got going for us right now is we're into the bye.
That is not the case this time around. In terms of what we do and what the people listening do, be Bears fans, I can't wait. October 27th is way too long a ways.
Where would we be without football?
Week 7 in the National Football League.
Packers along the sidelines, hand in hand. Here's the snap, low snap, placement made, kick to the upright, and it is good!
Yes!
It is good!
Yes!
It is good! The Green Bay Packers have won! Brandon McManus, 45-yard field goal. Welcome to Green Bay!
29-28 Vikings lead. Rookie Hogan Hatton snaps. Snap spot. Bates end over end. Kick is good. And that's the ball game. The Detroit Lions beat the Minnesota Vikings 31-29 and have claimed first place in the NFC North.
Four across the line for Carolina. Daniels snap, throws it away. Eckler hit as he makes the catch at the 5-yard line. After that drive ended, Logan, you were about 5 feet away from the training staff looking at Jaden Daniels. What did you see?
Yeah, it looks like he's a little bit of discomfort at the moment, like left side, left rib area. He just went into the tent now. We'll keep you updated.
Fourth down, less than a yard for a touchdown. Mahomes takes the snap and wants to throw it. He'll step up into the pocket. Mahomes is into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes.
Football's so great.
The harrowing bye week that no one enjoys.
Bye weeks. Bronco Nagurski didn't get no bye weeks. And now he's dead. Well, maybe they're a good thing.
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to your post-bye Bears week.
I want to know how much longer Bronco Nagurski would have lived if he had bye weeks. Because he lived to 81. It's pretty good.
Till 83.
Maybe he would have made it to 83 with a couple of bye weeks mixed in there. I wouldn't have guessed 81. I would have thought that all the damage of that hardcore football would have taken its toll.
And probably what life was like off of the field for him back then,
too. Did you know he was also a successful professional wrestler, recognized as a multiple-time world heavyweight champion?
That's what I was getting into. Yeah. Where, you know, that's also not good for you.
Yeah, probably not. I was just reading Wikipedia, though. That's how I roll.
Somebody's reading Wikipedia.
CM Punk knows me. He feels me.
Why do you only read Wikipedia for wrestlers?
Hold on, let me look up Jimmy Superfly Snuka.
Don't.
What? No?
Don't.
Is it bad news? Did things not end well for Superfly?
For a lot of wrestlers over the last 30 years, things have not ended well.
Oh, that's probably
true.
He
had a situation back in 83, actually.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, that's too bad. Well,
so yeah, don't do that.
83. Okay, I'll leave that one alone.
We
then
can get back to talking about the football. By
sure
the way,
we can. Well, hold on.
Spiegel and Holmes. That's Matt Spiegel. I'm Lawrence Holmes.
Sergeant Slaughter. Hang on. Go ahead.
You're probably all right looking that one up.
I'm all right with that one.
That one's fine.
He's still alive. He's 76.
Yeah, he was a G.I. Joe toy. So, you know, you're all right there.
All right, cool.
Don't look up Chris Benoit. Don't look up Lex Luger.
Oh, Benoit. I remember that.
Yeah. Right. Don't. Yeah. Those are bad things.
All right. But yeah, it was a bye week is correct. Mo talking about Bronco Nagurski is correct. I enjoyed the opportunity to watch a lot of non-Bears football because instead of watching through the lens of why don't the Bears have this, I was watching through the lens of can the Bears hang with this? Maybe it's possible. And I'm left, with lots of good questions to keep asking.
I still marvel at what Jared Goff has become. And like watching him yesterday handle the blitz from Brian Flores and crew so calmly. And is he 30 now? Like, I think he's just 30.
I think that's true.
Let me look it up.
He was number one overall and played right away and awfully good and well-known, much heralded on that rookie deal.
He just turned 30 last week.
He's got a lot of football left in his life.
Well, for sure. And when you think about what they were expecting when they made that trade, it was like, well, he'll be a fine enough placeholder until we draft our franchise quarterback.
Because they got all the picks and they were going to go in the tank, giving up on Stafford, and they pivoted, and instead they end up there. Yet to your point against the blitz, yesterday, Jared Goff against Brian Flores' vaunted blitz, 14 for 16, 149 yards with one touchdown, and just sacked once. By the way, last year in the two games against the Vikings and Brian Flores' vaunted blitz, 43 for 55, 493 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions. That's last year. Mm-hmm. So this is three games in a row that Jared Goff has beaten the blitz with aplomb.
And making that connection with Brian Johnson and them figuring stuff out, them looking for different weapons and using them effectively. The first half of that game was a little rocky. Second half of that game was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the hell out of watching that yesterday and seeing those guys play like it meant something. That was the other part. And I hope that that's, once we get to week 11, I hope that the Bears are playing for something and that they act like they're playing for something. The way that we saw Minnesota and Detroit and Green Bay yesterday.
Green Bay and Houston. Like, I thought both those games had the absolute feel of playoff importance, playoff heaviness. And I think all the teams involved are feeling it like that. Because you come out of that game, the Vikings and the Lions are the two 5-1 teams in the NFC.
You woke up this morning and all of a sudden the Bears were in last place.
Yeah. And the Texans and the Packers are both 5-2. I mean, those are all playoff teams at this point, and the games were heavy. And you got to execute all day. You want to hang with these teams in the NFC North, Bears? You got to execute all day, deep into games, as the pressure mounts. The Bears are going to have to be great. And it's a little hard to picture them being great and executing all the time and deep into games. I don't want to go, I'm not going to buy property in Worrytown where you remain the mayor, but I'm going to hold on to my rental property in Concernville.
Sure.
Because as good as the Vikings were for much of yesterday, there's that moment. It's 2:41 left, and Darnold, as the Vikings are trying to eat clock, he has Justin Jefferson open on a 3rd and 4.
He sure does.
That would have just about put the game away. Rolled right, really good design.
I also like that they went for that instead of giving up and just saying, well, let's run clock. Now, it may have cost them, but I like that they went for it in that moment.
It's the NFL, man. You go for it and you put a team away. And if he completes that pass, which he overthrows for no reason except his own nerves and whatever, then they have to punt and the Lions drive. When the Lions are coming back down, Jared Goff with 1:18 left, they're already in long field goal range, 1st and 10, 1:18 left, and Goff throws into a double team and nails Amon-Ra St. Brown perfectly down to the 23 with a 112, and then they could grind it down all the way. Like, you got to convert every one of those big plays. You've got to execute, and Darnold not quite ready to do it all day long, and it cost them.
He's still pretty good.
Yes, he was.
I went into watching this game, Speaks, and going, all right, I've heard all of it. I've seen the highlights. I've listened to Kevin O'Connell talk glowingly about the reborn and rejuvenated Sam Darnold. I need to see it for myself. And I saw a lot of it.
So a lot of it was pretty damn good.
I saw him making smart decisions, making scrambles, like going out there and running when he needed to and picking up 39 yards on the ground in some of those situations, anticipatory throws. I still have some questions about arm strength with him. And I don't mean can throw the Hail Mary. I mean can throw a ball over the middle and get it there on time. Like, I still worry about that with him. I thought he was really good yesterday. But that
play late, man. You can't miss on intermediate stuff like that with the game on the line.
Like, it's wild. His line, 22 of 27, 259 yards, a touchdown, one interception, a passer rating of 103.5.
It's really good. It's really good.
On the other side, the dude went 22 of 25, 280 yards, two touchdowns, and no interception.
Oh, man.
Passer rating of 140.
Shane, what was your stat on Jared Goff last 3 weeks?
Last four wins, so okay. Four-game win streak. He's thrown nine touchdowns and has 15 total incomplete passes.
Is that good?
Better than most, yeah.
Okay.
It's amazing. And there, dude, just David Montgomery is such a badass. He's so there's
looking
a lot
like
of,
he was going to be out of the game. Then he finds his way back into the game, comes up with a couple of big plays for them in the pass game.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolute badass.
So is Aaron Jones. I mean, there's Aaron Jones.
So is Amon-Ross St. Brown.
Yeah. So is Justin Jefferson. There's lots of good players. It's a good division. Lawrence, I come out of yesterday feeling more impressed about the NFC North than I was going into the day yesterday.
I think that that's fair because what you got from Minnesota and Detroit was a crackerjack game of football. Like, it was one of those games where you weren't turning away if you were watching it because you wanted to see how it was going to play out, how it was going to end, what moves was Dan Campbell going to make, like what risk was he going to take at some point to try to secure a win. And then the Packers game, they seem to be able to overcome the fact that their guy might be more Favre than Rodgers. And they're out here winning games with their defense.
C.J. Stroud threw for 86 yards. Threw for 86 yards, all those freaking weapons. And that year he had last year. They did run it, though, 142 on 33 carries. There's a lot. Do you realize what was going to happen at the end of that Vikings and Lions game? I don't know if the listeners realize if they were watching or whatever, but like that illegal formation penalty, that meant that they threw a Hail Mary on the final play.
Instead of a 68-yard kick?
They were going to try a 68-yard kick, which would have been an NFL record, but supposedly is in that kid's range.
Yeah, it was funny to hear O'Connell talk about how, you know, we thought about for a second sending him out there for 73. Like that's wild.
Who are they? Me and Tecmo Bowl against Robbie?
Yeah, what were you doing?
Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, but the fact that they felt maybe not comfortable, but they thought it was a better chance than throwing up the Hail Mary to kick a 68-yard field goal. Like
it is nuts.
Yard. Like, that's wild stuff, man, that we are seeing. And so you have all of this, and because think about how good everyone felt about the Bears leading into Sunday. Like, Sunday was a nice day. Like, Sunday you just go, all right, I'm going to watch these two terrible teams play in the morning, and then I'll be ready. I'll watch the Packers, and then I'll be ready for the game with Minnesota and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
You're having yourself a nice morning, and then you go, oh, Detroit won, so the Packers ended up winning that game too, huh? My team's in last place.
In last place.
How did that happen?
But
and there's trouble, by the way, because I am the mayor of Worrytown.
There's trouble for the Bears?
Well, remember how we were looking at the playoff stuff?
Yeah.
And Minnesota's kind of messing things up.
Yeah.
They're kind of the outlier. Well, Philadelphia got themselves together yesterday.
They're still on the bubble. At 4-2 right now, the Eagles are on the bubble. The Bears are in as of right now. They're in as the 7th seed, according to NFL.com. The Lions are the 1 seed. The Commanders are the 2 seed. It's all a little skewed because of the byes at this point.
Correct.
The Bucks who play tonight are the 3. The Seahawks are the 4 after their trouncing of Atlanta yesterday. And then the wild card teams are Vikings, Packers, Bears as of right now.
The thing is that...
That's hilarious. It hasn't happened since 2002. 4 teams from the same division.
I'm not concerned about like the seeding. And granted, they played a horrible team. I'm more concerned about them getting their bleep together. And that's what it felt like I was watching yesterday with the Eagles. I felt like, oh, they figured some stuff out.
Hmm.
Oh, well, they are going to rely on their run game when they have an opportunity to do so. And Saquon Barkley goes for 176 yards against his own team.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they did kind of scale things down for Jalen Hurts, and he made the one big throw in the game that he needed to make to A.J. Brown. And like, huh, I wonder if they're getting their bleep together after Sirianni goes all crazy last week and has it. I'm looking for teams that are going to mess things up for the Bears.
Yeah.
That as mayor of Worrytown, that is now my focus.
I understand.
Singular focus, especially on bye week.
I'm just glad you have so much time available to worry. I mean, that's what you got to do. You take that job.
Yeah, if you get that job, that's what you're supposed to do.
You just know, man, that's got to be exhausting, though.
Yes.
I hope you have a good support system.
He just got back from London, so.
Yes. So.
Why did he go there again? Oh, to support the Chicago Bears.
I'm trying to go get business for Worrytown, and that business is out in London.
At this point, Kentucky. Look, it's the Spiegel and Holmes show right here, and our text lines are filled with people either annoyed that we haven't turned the page or annoyed at me bringing up constantly that we haven't turned the page towards the Commanders. We can't turn the page yet. I know you want to now today, Lawrence. See how the world has turned. I wanted to last week. You wouldn't let me. You want to do it today, and I refuse to because we don't know what's happening with Jaden Daniels yet. We need to wait for the Commanders to speak on it and wait till we get a little more clarity.
So to be clear.
Yes.
Last week when we were telling you that we probably shouldn't turn the page because we don't know what's going to happen in this weekend's game.
Right, and I thought that was ridiculous.
You now have come around to, hey, look at that. Something important might have happened in one of those games that will not allow us to turn the page.
That's fair. That's fair.
I just wanted to be clear.
It points out a small moment of hypocrisy amidst my usual logically airtight existence.
That we shouldn't start previewing the Washington game because we don't know who's going to play quarterback in it.
I thought I was done with the relentless need to point out logical inconsistencies. I thought I was done with that, but I guess I'm not. But that's fine. That's fine. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, and I can see the irony in all of this, but we just don't know yet. By the way, Dan Quinn apparently said that Jaden Daniels, he said this just a few moments ago, will be considered week to week with his rib injury.
Did you just turn the page after you just said you weren't going to turn the page?
That's not me turning the page. That's just me reporting the news, isn't it?
I feel like the page got turned.
I feel like everybody's upset.
We just had the audio.
We did? Well, then, forget
it's okay.
Forget I said it.
All right.
Just dump the whole thing and go backwards.
No, turn the page back. Tanny, let's hear from Dan Quinn.
We do. We've got Dan
the
Quinn.
The status for Jaden put down as week to week. As you guys know, it's a rib injury, and we'll take him through, all the steps at practice and assess how he's doing and keep working it through that. We're hopeful he can play, but we'll also make sure to take every precautionary step and do it smartly for the player and the man. And so I want to make sure I gave you all the updates that I had. And so it's not going to be something that's going to knock him out for a long term. And so, like I said, we're going to list it as week to week. And like I said, hopefully we'll play this week and we'll take it every day of it all the way through.
His mom says he's fine.
That's good. All right. See, I'm glad we played that audio because my flippant comment filling people in is not nearly enough for what this show demands and what the listeners deserve.
Week to week is kind of interesting.
Yeah, week to week is interesting. That's doing a lot of weird contextualization because this week counts.
I mean, he could also be playing games like we saw Mike Tomlin do all week. Well, we gave Russ starts, but you never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
There's a lot of quarterback shenanigans like that going on. The Will Levis thing, the soft benching of Will Levis.
He's just bad.
Yeah.
But maybe it's time for a hard benching of Andy Dalton. I told you it has a shelf life, and we are there now. We are at the place where, people have figured out Andy Dalton. I'm shocked it took them 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Shocked that it took the league 3 weeks to figure out Andy Dalton. Can't forget about Andy, though.
All right, so that is a massive bit of news, which does not really clear up anything and it in terms of Washington's quarterback for this huge game. And it what it really does is sets the table for a breathless watch of the injury report and whether there's any activity, and probably with no declaration until Friday or even beyond, could end up a game-time decision here at this point.
I look forward to us turning the page on Wednesday because at least then we'll have fresh sound from people in places and things.
That's probably the thing to do.
When we come back, Baseball stars acting like baseball stars. How great was that this weekend? We'll discuss next. Spiegel and Holmes here with you till 6 on The Score.
Inning should be over. Now the 1-2. Swung on, hit high in the air, deep center. Thomas is back, track, wall, gone! And the Yankees come flying out of the first base dugout. Soto just now starts his jog. A towering three-run home run to the right of center. What an at-bat for Soto. His third home run in this series. And the Yankees take advantage of an extra out due to the Rocchio error. And they lead it 5-2 here in the 10th. And that's why you just can't make a mistake defensively and give this lineup one more crack. What an incredible at-bat by Juan Soto. Wow.
We had an incredible weekend of baseball to go along with an incredible weekend of football. And the errors by Rocchio really cost Cleveland.
Yeah, and they can't afford to do it because you're built on defense and fundamentals and bullpen. You know, and so you got to be perfect.
Errors in the ALCS.
I know.
That's not good baseball.
It's fascinating though, man, to see all the stars show up and be as great as they've been. Like four of the biggest six stars in the postseason overall are still alive and are in this thing with Judge and Ohtani and Betts and Soto. And then there's Freddie Freeman, if he's healthy, is like a former MVP and an absolute brilliant hitter. And then
Garrett Cole.
Garrett Cole is certainly one of the top 5-7 pitchers in the game when he's healthy. And Giancarlo Stanton hits it harder and farther than anybody in the game when he's healthy and has for more than a decade.
Was that 117 miles per hour off the bat for his home run?
His at bat for the two-run homer that tied it on Saturday is behind 0-2 and finds a way to spit on three pitches and then, you know, gets a slider that's got too much of the plate. All the stars showing up in the biggest moment. I mean, those three guys of Judge and Stanton and Soto hit 9 homers in a 5-game series. And every one of them seemed to be massively important and come at a huge time.
The thing that continues to amaze me about Stanton, and I don't know if anyone else, like, this is just kind of a geeky baseball thing that I love about Stanton. The one where he hits 117, like that, clearly, like if he gets it and he knows that he's getting it, he can hit it a long way. What I find fascinating about him is when he gets fooled, when he is out on his front foot, sometimes out there so far that you're like, there's no way that he's going to be able to hit the ball at all. Not only does he hit the ball, he gets it over the wall. Like,
yeah,
that shouldn't be allowed. Like, you shouldn't be able to be that good at what it is that you're doing to be completely fooled and just be like, yep, watch this. Boop.
Certain star sluggers have just refined what they're doing to the extent that it becomes dependable. And it's amazing when you actually get a chance to watch it in focus. There's a reason that those dudes make what they make, and to have it actually show up. I feel like my entire baseball life has featured Yankees lineups with highly paid sluggers who are expected to do their job in the postseason. And very often they have not, going back for decades. Very often they're going out and buying dudes and they don't get it done. They're like, well, I don't know. It seemed like a good plan. And we laugh and we chortle. At least some of us who hate the evil empire will laugh and chortle. But here we are. Every one of those dudes actually showed up. Aaron Judge's salary is more than the entire lineup that Cleveland put out there. Just his salary alone. Soto's is close. Stanton's is close. All three of them are making 31 on the low end individually, you know? But they all just freaking dominated, and it matters. It's a bad offseason for the concept of responsible spending. It's a bad offseason for that when you've got Ohtani and Betts and Freeman and Soto and Stanton and Cole and Judge.
Even guys like Teoscar Hernandez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of money that's being spent on the Dodgers roster overall.
Intelligent spending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tough moment for intelligent spending right here. And it's
you know what's intelligent spending? Getting a bunch of guys who are really good at baseball, yeah, putting them on one team.
I know. And I get it. I get the frustration, Jed, that they don't always end up delivering, and that's not always who wins, but very often they'll help you get there. And then often once you're there, they'll help you get over the top. I mean, the Phillies haven't been back, but it's not Bryce Harper's fault. It's not Kyle Schwarber's fault that the Phillies haven't been back.
When the Dodgers clinch last night, I found myself kind of reflexively going, what a year for Michael Kopech.
Yeah, oh my God.
Like, for real. Think about this, where when spring training breaks, he knows he's on a team that's probably going to lose 100 games. He probably never thinks we're going to be the worst team that's ever played. But he knows that they're probably going to lose 100 games. And then you get rescued.
Mm-hmm.
You have five really incredible last outings where you start to put things together as a White Sox. And then, hey, we found a trade partner. Would you be interested? Yes. We haven't even it doesn't matter. Where are you sending me? To the Dodgers. What? Okay. How quickly can I get myself to the airport to join that? And he has continued to be a dominant pitcher. Those things that we worried about with Kopech in his career of like big moments, he had a bunch of big moments on his way to getting here, and he thrived in those opportunities.
Yeah, I didn't think it was going to come. I flat out said it during the year that he wasn't somebody that I was going to want to feel comfortable trusting in big moments and in the playoffs, but he has been very, very good. A winning atmosphere, a confident atmosphere, and the tweaks that they made about his pitch usage have settled him down. Whether that's just for now or whether it's lasting in the future, I hope it lasts for him. He's a likable guy, but he is mentally and emotionally settled as a pitcher in a way that I did not think was coming.
And to be fair to the White Sox, they're the ones who told him to mix the pitches up. And then he actually started listening before he left to go be with the Dodgers. And I know that one of the storylines is going to be the Dodgers fixed Michael Kopech. Well, yeah, partly.
No, he was more open to being fixed. And but there is something, there's more there. There's more conversation there, but the games don't even start until Friday. So we've got time. I will say this, the star factor, this is only the sixth time that the two MVPs, likely MVPs, are both going to be in the World Series, because Shohei and Judge are going to win the MVPs. And this is up there with Buster Posey, Miguel Cabrera in 2012, Canseco and Kirk Gibson in 88, George Brett and Mike Schmidt in 80, like series like that. So even just the very biggest and brightest stars, baseball has those, and then it also has Soto and Betts and more.
Whole lot of MVPs in this World Series. We're going to talk with an MVP. Kurt Warner is going to talk ball with us next. Spiegel and Holmes on the Score.